What the Tech is brought to you by Gigapoints. Gigapoints is a site that helps you find the best credit card. Gigapoints uses data to pinpoint the cards that'll give you the most points based on your actual spend. See how much you could earn at gigapoints.com/Andrew. Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Of course, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
I'm pretty good.
Pretty good. We have entered. We're at the halfway mark for November. Actually, we're past the halfway mark for November. This year has been something. we're about to go into another lockdown.
The better.
Yeah, New York City is about to enter another lockdown, so that's exciting. And we don't seem like things are close to ending. So it's I'm in a very good mood today, Paul. I don't know if you could tell. It's going to be one of those days. There is a lot to talk about, though. Very excited to be here, obviously. So after the show, I don't know if you guys saw on Twitter, I posted that I finally ordered all these parts for the new production machine here at the studio. And I'm sending this one to Suncast, John, our producer in Michigan, so we could have a secondary satellite studio, and he could kind of do everything the way that we've been doing it. So now I got to build this new machine, and do you enjoy doing these builds, Paul?
I don't do them that much. You know, a couple of years ago, my son and I built a PC for him that he still uses. I was mostly shocked that it came up the first time, you know. I mean, I used to build PCs fairly regularly, but it wasn't something I had done for many years. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I kind of just buy PCs now.
I've always
appreciate the skill involved, you know.
I'm trying to think when the last PC I bought was, and it was a Compaq Passario from I can tell you the exact model, actually. It was from 1999. And the thing about this is that it had, and this is what sold me on this, right? It had a built-in DSL card.
Wow.
Which was very rare at the time.
Sure.
And
it had two phone jacks on the back, basically.
No, it was
like an in and out kind of thing, so you could chain off.
Yeah, I believe there was an in and out. I'm trying to remember how it was, but it had a built-in DSL. So essentially all you would do is, you remember you had the filters? You had to connect the line to the filter first. You would connect it to the filter and plug it into that thing. And it was supposed to work. It didn't really work. That was the big problem. It didn't really work. And this thing was like, and it was 750 megahertz. And I was like, my God, this thing is fast. This thing is fast. And it had a capture card in it. It was actually stock. That thing was pretty cool. It had an AMD at the time, ATI all-in-wonder capture card.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. It was a Hophog capture card that I swapped for an all-in-wonder ATI card. And I think it had a ridiculous amount of RAM. It was almost like it was like a special order, and they just
12
never came
megabytes of RAM.
Yeah, I'm sure it was like 16 megs or 32 megs of RAM.
I mean, 1999, it could have been.
I think it was 128. Does that make sense for 1999?
Yeah. I don't remember anymore.
Somebody in the chat room, I'm sure, could probably guess. But that was the last PC that I actually bought as my main, you know, my main desktop. And after that, I built everything. So for 20 something years, I just build it all. Little couple of misconceptions. You don't save money by building it, but you do get better components.
Yeah. I mean, you get exactly what you want.
But now it's totally different, right? I mean, HP is putting out desktops that are equivalent to this, you know, the gaming desktops.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, if you want to open and do something, you're going to have a little bit of a difficulty, which is interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. So after the show, I'm going to go on the air for a little bit. I'm not going to do the full build, but I'm going to start building this thing out.
Right.
After the show. So it might be cool to kind of go through that. You can watch me forget how to do all this and get thermal paste all over my hands and then rub my eyes and have to go to the hospital because that's how my day is going to end today. Thermal paste in the eye. That's how it ends. So we're going to talk about that and a whole lot of other stuff, obviously. But, Paul, I wanted to kind of touch on this conversation that we had last week about Apple. Last week's show, we did a watch-along for the Apple announcement for their new M1 chips and their laptops and their desktop line. And we've had a week. A lot of people have gotten this in their hands. A lot of reviewers have had time with this device. And I think it's interesting the reaction to this because, as you predicted, people were very happy with this. The reviewers were very happy. The benchmarks showed decent signs, but a lot of the consumers are not happy about this, and we'll go into that. But before we continue, Paul, I want to take a minute and talk about our great sponsor, and that's GigaPoints. I don't think a lot of people know how important it is to have the right credit card. People, you know, I'm one of these people that didn't really follow along with the points and the earnings and stuff like that and how many points you can get or miles or whatever. I just use my credit card all the time. And when I found GigaPoints a while ago from another podcast that was talking about them. So I checked them out and they really make it easy to find out what you could be earning, whether it's hundreds or even thousands of dollars in rewards. GigaPoints is a site that uses data to match you with the right card, the way that you actually spend your money. So whether, you know, depending you want free travel or cash back or points, they are able to determine which card is for you. So it's super easy. There's no answering a bunch of questions or doing a lot of research. Simply create an account and you receive your recommendations in a few minutes. The GigaPoints algorithm does all the work. They're very serious about protection. So you don't have to, you know, be that concerned about what's happening with the data. Your banking information is encrypted and secure during the entire process. They don't store any of that information. Companies like Venmo and American Express use the same system. The cool thing is it maximizes your earning potential. So other credit card sites, it's a one-stop shop, right? One-size-fits-all approach to show you what card works. And also a lot of times they do some weird stuff depending on what card they want to push for that month, which I don't necessarily like. GigaPoints only wants to find the best deal for you, and that's great. If you want free flights, this is the card for you. You want cash back? This is the card for you. So here's how you do this. To see how much you could be earning on your credit cards each year, head on over to gigapoints.com/Andrew. That's GIGApoints.com/Andrew, and you can get started over there. I went through this. I'm actually dropping my Apple card because I wasn't getting a lot from this, and I'm switching over to another card. And they showed, like, you know, they project, like, this is how much money you could be making, you know, saving from this. And it's a big difference. So it's been a huge help for me, and I think you guys should definitely check it out, and it could be a huge help for you. GigaPoints.com/Andrew. Thank you to GigaPoints for supporting the show. All right. Let's talk about this, because you wrote an article on Thorop Premium. Let me pull up here. Of course, I X'd out the story as I praised you before we went on the air about how, you know, this did a very good job at breaking down where we fall in terms of, you know, what this device is going to mean to the market. Because something that you bring up while I pull up the story is that, you know, Microsoft and the PC market have had an opportunity to kind of do exactly what is happening now on the Apple side, and they couldn't do it. They still can't do it properly.
Well, I mean, I would say they can't do it. I mean, there's been an effort on the Microsoft side, the PC side, to obviously port Windows to ARM, and some PC makers have backed it. We've got one chipset maker, but I mean, it's such a small portion of the market. You know, I think one of Apple's strengths, and I should, you know, to be fair to Apple, they have many strengths with regards to this kind of technology transition, is just that they are bringing over their entire product line. So this isn't a half-baked effort. It's not a side project. It's not a hobby. It's we're going to do this, and we need to make sure that our hardware, our chipsets are adapted to work well for the Mac, and we need to make sure that the Mac is adapted to work well with these chipsets. And they did that, you know, and you know, it's hard, you know, the two sides to this are, it's impossible not to be impressed by the quality of what they've done. It's amazing. It just is. Technologically, this is an incredible achievement. But, you know, the flip side of this is everyone's like, oh, the world's changing, you know, everything's different. And the truth is the Mac is still less than 10% of the PC market. That's not going to change. And unfortunately, or however you want to look at it, for a variety of reasons, the PC market is just not going to go in this direction. So, you know, long term, I mean, I'm sure Microsoft kind of still thinks and hopes and maybe it could happen, but there's just no intestinal fortitude to make it happen because 90-something percent of the PC, well, on the PC side, 99-point-something percent of all the PCs in the world aren't on ARM. They're on Intel.
Yeah.
So this is too much legacy there.
So do you think it's the legacy? I mean, listen, it's really not an apples to, you know, apples comparison here, right? There's so many other moving parts on the PC side. One, mm-hmm. every manufacturer functions differently as a company. They got to now work with Microsoft on this.
Sorry to interrupt. I mean, you should look at that one thing, I mean, just to get it started, because Apple makes all of the Macs. So, you know, Apple makes the hardware. Apple makes the software. Apple now makes the chipsets. I mean, there are pros and cons to this approach, but, you know, it allows them to do what they're doing. You know, Microsoft's approach, and this dates back decades, has been to partner with other companies. And in the PC space, what that means is that historically, other companies have made the computers. Microsoft makes the software. Another company makes the CPU. Other companies make other hardware components. Other companies make hardware peripherals that require drivers that are written by them that are of varying degrees of quality. And it kind of goes on and on and on. And so they're like, you know, the pro and con thing is obviously in the PC space, you have a lot of choice. And you have a much wider range of prices. We were just talking, you're building a computer. That's something you cannot do with a Mac. You can build to order a Mac, but I mean, you can't build your own Mac. So there's all these pros or good points or positive signs on the PC side. And then, you know, but we can't do this transition. We the PC market is just not going to transition to ARM. I mean, it's just
not. I don't think it has to. And I think this is an interesting thing this week, right? Because you see all these reviews, like there was a very detailed one on The Verge, Engadget did the same. You see these reviews and, you know, I would say that they were pretty fair reviews.
It seems so.
I didn't find a problem with the way that they reviewed it. Obviously, they haven't had it for a month or so. You know, this is the problem. You need long-term testing to determine how well this device works.
Well, I also want to hear from some normal people, because one of the little issues that I see a lot in these reviews is they'll say something like apps like open lightning fast, you know, and it's like, what does that mean? So like if you had, you review Macs, so you use Macs. And so, you know, you've been using a 2018 MacBook Pro and then the 2019 MacBook Pro comes out. When you write a review of that, do you say, oh my God, the apps open lightning quick, you know?
No, I don't think anybody talks about that.
No, because I think what happens is people go in with preconceived notions and biases about whether or not it's even possible for Apple to do what they're doing. And when things just work, they act like it's, you know, like, oh my God, it's magical. Like all this old software is suddenly faster than it ever was before. And it's like, I bet day to day, it's just fine. It's normal. And by the way, that is a triumphant achievement.
It is.
I keep referencing this, but 3 years ago, before Windows 10 on ARM went live with the first PCs, I wrote that if this thing is successful, this new platform, it will be boring because it will just look like Windows. It will act like Windows. It will run Windows apps. Everything will just work and blah, 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 whatever. That's not what happened, right? Everything was really slow. The compatibility was terrible and still is, you know, 3 days later, 3 years later. The reason what Apple has done with the Mac and the M1 chipset and so forth, the reason it's so impressive is because it just works.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have to make up, you know, special accolades for it. It's amazing that this works at all, that it appears to work basic, what we call full speed or whatever, normally.
Normal.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Yeah. Well, I've heard conversations where, and again, you're talking about bizarre comparisons here, right? Because they're talking about how lightning fast this thing is. One comparison was, and I think Bruce in our chat room is listening, an app developer developed his app in 36 seconds on an M1 MacBook Pro. Okay.
Like compiled it or whatever.
Compiled it.
Yeah.
On his iMac Pro, which is a 10 core 64 gig system, it was 56 seconds. Now, I'm going to say there's a lot of moving parts in this. One, What else was he running on that Mac, on that iMac Pro? How long has he had it? How bloated is this thing at this point? So all this comes into play. You know what? When you buy a brand new computer, doesn't matter what a piece of crap it is. We were talking about those Kindles.
Day one is the best.
Day one is always the best. Day one, everything is working great, and then it just falls apart from there. Those Kindles, Kindle Fires are the epitome of that story.
Right. You're like, oh, maybe this will be fine.
Yeah, maybe.
And then Tuesday comes, and you're like, oh, wait, why did I buy this piece of crap? Look, I'm sure the M1 base Macs are great. I want to be really clear about this. I'm not disparaging them at all. I am nothing but impressed by this. But coming at it from sort of the Windows side of the fence, aside from the whole competition thing, which exists in some people's eyes and doesn't exist in other people's eyes, where Apple has done this thing that Microsoft has not, and I don't think can. At the end of the day, the Mac platform just got better.
Hmm? Why can't Microsoft do this?
Well, for those reasons we talked about earlier a little bit. You know, the whole partner ecosystem, you know, like in other words, Apple has, and again, from a strategy perspective, pros and cons. For some reason, it is in this company's DNA that they need to control the entire stack. And they've moved so aggressively to push aside partners and take over what those partners were doing for themselves. And you know, there are some negative aspects to that for sure. However, because they've done this, they now do have they have the whole widget. So they have literally, they make the devices, they make the chips in the devices, they make the software that runs on the devices, they control the app store on the device. Like this is their little control thing. Yeah. But there are big advantages to it. And it allows them to do things that are not possible on the Windows side. So for example, Microsoft doesn't do this. Microsoft partners. They partner on hardware, they partner on software. Now they do make their own PCs. And actually, they make a few of their own custom chipsets too. Everyone seems to be doing that. Google does that. You may see something over the next year where Google CPUs are going to come out and they're going to be in Chromebooks and probably the next generation Pixel phones. You know, we'll get to that when that happens. But on the Microsoft side, the closest they can get, well, actually, let me just step through how they did it. They wanted to bring Windows 10 to ARM. So they partnered with Qualcomm, the biggest ARM chipset maker. And Qualcomm agreed to do this. And the first generation devices came out. And they were running a smartphone chip. It was this off the shelf. I think it was a Snapdragon 835, if I remember correctly. And in the smartphone world at that time, a Snapdragon 835 was pretty damn powerful. In a computer running PC software, it was terrible. The performance was terrible. The performance of native Windows 10, you know, the platform itself and maybe some of the apps that were built in was probably okay. I don't actually remember too well. The battery life was fantastic, but its ability to emulate x86 apps was terrible. And so they worked together, Microsoft and Qualcomm, to improve the chips so that they would work better on PCs.
What year was this?
It was probably 3 years ago, right? So in the interim, what happened was basically Qualcomm evolved their chipsets so that they basically split development so that there were PC-specific chips that had PC-specific optimizations. And when the first of those chips finally arrived, and I'm drawing a blank now on which one it was, the 850 maybe or whatever, maybe the ACX, whatever, you know, what happened was the performance was a little bit better but still not acceptable. Compatibility was never solved. And then the battery life went down because, of course, now you're customizing the chip. You don't get 20 to 22 hours of battery life. You get 15 hours, which, by the way, still impressive, but the compatibility issues kind of dogged it. So as of actually just this past month or two, Qualcomm did a minor rev of the 8CX chipset, which I think it's called 8CX Gen 2, so very minimal performance changes. Microsoft does a customized version of that chip for its own computer, which I think is called the SQ1. So I think they call the slightly revised version the SQ2 or whatever. And it just doesn't matter, you know. And this is as close as they can get because you got to remember, from Microsoft's perspective, this is a future bet. It's a tiny portion of the PC market today. But it's just unless everything just works, it's always going to be a tiny portion. But think about it from Qualcomm's perspective. They sell 2 billion chips a year to phones and mobile devices, over 2 billion. how many did they sell to PC makers to go into these stupid PCs? 10,000?
Yeah, not as much.
I mean, it's an order of magnitude smaller. It's just not a priority. And by the way, if let's say everything went right, Windows 10 and ARM was a huge success. Every PC maker embraced it. Everyone got on board. We literally kicked Intel to the curb. Everything went Qualcomm. Imagine, that's the best case, isn't it? That's 200 million computers. That's still 10% of the smartphone small. Market. Yeah. And that's if everything goes right. And by the way, everything is never going to go right.
Well, it just shows you the business that, I don't know, you know, maybe that's been Intel's mindset here. Why spend so much on R&D when we could slowly evolve the device and not sure. dump all this money into something we're only going to sell X amount of units for? You know, I do not see, and this is where I don't know, I'm torn on, right? Like, the good enough mentality, this device, the M1, and then probably the M2 and the M3 and the M4 leaving after that, they're going into BMW territory at this point with an M5 and an M6. So when we're at that point, this is not going to be the same chip. You know, right now we're kind of stuck.
They'll probably have different levels of chips.
Yeah, 16 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, they're not going to keep using the same chip in every Mac, right?
No, they're going to have higher performance
Pro,
ones.
When the Mac Pro comes, right, the MacBook Pro 16, it's going to be, I picture them having an M2, M3, M4, whatever you want to call them, that are upper level, support, you know, dedicated graphics, more RAM, like you said. And those will go into the Pro devices, you know. Every device that they've upgraded so far is an entry-level device, right? In fact, they've swept the empty entry-level devices with new M1 devices. So it's very interesting. So when we get to the Mac, the real MacBook Pro, the one with four Thunderbolt ports, dedicated graphics, right? Or the Mac Pro or the iMac or the iMac Pro, you know, that's where things are going to get interesting. But, that's not where things are interesting. I don't want anyone to think I'm criticizing what Apple did. It's amazing. It's amazing. It really is. From the perspective of the PC world, my only problem with it is this isn't going to move the needle on anything.
No.
For us, you know, and I feel bad about that.
It's not cheaper, right? It's not cheaper.
Cheaper.
As far as price goes.
Oh, well, I mean, look, they held the price. Actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think the Mac Mini is $100 less expensive, right? The entry level.
Because they don't move any at this point. They're not moving.
Well, it's also Mac Minis. Okay. Yeah, I mean, there might have been other things too. I don't know, but you know, obviously, on the Mac Mini and on the MacBook Pro, they still sell the Intel versions because people might need more RAM. You know, and that's fine. That's a temporary condition. That's cool. But, you know, they promised this kind of frictionless transition. And the idea was, like, you're buying a Mac, it doesn't really matter, you know?
Yeah.
And
it seems like it worked.
Yeah, it does. And I seriously, that kind of thing is amazing. Because,
Paul, something else we're not even talking about here, right? Because we're very heavily into technology. This is a big PR blitz for Apple. I got to tell you. Numerous friends have asked me about this device, have asked me about the new MacBooks and about how they want to get a new MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro. And they have gone out
for some reason
and they've ordered it. You know why? Because they think it's better than what they have. And Apple is the king at doing that. They're good at convincing you that, have a good MacBook Pro, but this one is the one
but
you want.
All right, so... But now you're putting me in the awkward position of defending a company that I am trying very hard to.
I know, you've defended them a lot today.
look, this is, and I keep using this word, this is like the triumph, if you will, of what they've done is this. Yes, I mean, in the short term, they're going to be enthusiasts who buy these things. But as far as average consumers go, honestly, and I wouldn't always give them this kind of credit, but in this case, I think it's really warranted. A normal person walks into the store to buy a Mac, like my wife. Actually, my wife would never buy a Mac, but a normal person, whatever, they need a new Mac. And they're like, well, you know, the MacBook Air, I know that I've heard this name. I know it's popular. It looks great. I'll take one of these things. It's $1,000. Here you go. They walk out the door. They go home. They download Chrome. They install Office. They do whatever they do on their Mac. It doesn't matter. Everything works.
Yeah. They don't know.
Perfect. They don't know. They don't need to know. That's what's beautiful about it. Now, their imagine the poor
Rosetta,
sap,
Rosetta,
though.
Right?
What's that?
The emulator's Rosetta.
Yeah, but it technically, that's the other. Let's get to that in a second, because that actually, what they've done there is super interesting. But imagine, like, you're the same normal person and you've gone into a Best Buy now and you're like, well, I need to buy a new PC. And someone shows you this, like, thin and light laptop-y thing or a tablet-y thing or a convertible PC thing. It doesn't matter what it is. It's running Windows 10 and ARM, but you don't really know that. No one says anything to you. And you bring it home and you boot it up and it's Windows. It says Windows. It looks like Windows. It's the same Windows 10 you always ran. And then you start trying to install the stuff you want to put on there. And it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. It's a completely different experience. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, you would have to have a very detailed conversation with somebody about Windows 10 and ARM before you should feel comfortable letting a normal person use that system. Yeah. There's just too many things to mention. Do you run Photoshop? Oh, well, you might want to wait. Although actually now there's a beta version finally, but it doesn't run 64-bit Intel software. It's a big deal. None of the drivers work. It's a big deal. You know, the performance is still pretty lousy. It's a big deal. You buy a MacBook Air, you take it home. It's great.
But here's a question for you, Paul. On the PC side, why would you buy a ARM-based, Qualcomm-based Windows laptop or Windows PC?
Why would you?
Yeah, why?
Well, that's a great question. Well, I don't know. Why would you? Right now, I would say you shouldn't.
But that's what I'm trying to understand. Like, I understand Apple's approach is very different. They're telling you, this is the direction we're going. Like, there is no other option. Right now, you do have one, but in 3 years...
Yeah, it's going away. Right. It's transition. Gone. We're in the... Yeah. Yep.
So, they're you know, forcefully, and I don't mean that as a negative, they're forcefully telling you, this is your only option, this is where we're going, we control the hardware, we control the software, you know how good our phones work, our tablets work, what's going to be the difference? Nothing. This is going to work just as smooth as that, we know what we're doing. So, if I'm going to buy a Mac, first of all, I think if I'm going to buy a Mac, I don't even care about what chips are inside. I don't know what's inside.
I mean, obviously, technical people will care, right? We are sitting here. We'll debate all these things and blah, blah, blah. But any normal person, whatever Mac you want to buy, you buy it today. It's going to last for years. It's going to be fine. Doesn't matter if it's running Intel or M1 or whatever.
Great thing, Paul. My wife has – I can't not hear Borat now in my head because of the stupid return. Every time I say my wife, I have to repeat it in my head in the Borat voice. Every time. It took me years to stop doing that. And now I'm back. now it's haunting me again. My wife, constantly. So she came to me. She has a MacBook Pro, right? i7 beast of a MacBook Pro. She's like, I don't know what's going on. Everything is so slow. I have no idea what's going on. I look at this thing. She has like 80 million tabs open. you know? Yeah. Every app is open. Everything is open. I'm like, just reset the thing. You'll be fine. It'll be fine. Just reset it. And she does it. She's like, oh, yeah, it's great. But you got to, like, I'm not ragging on my wife, but most people that use these devices are not thinking the way we do. And I'm not saying that as a knock. I'm saying that as this is why Apple is so successful in their PR. They don't talk about speed. They just tell you that this is better than everybody else. And you know what? Look how nice this freaking thing looks. Buy it.
My wife, who is a normal person,
Can you say it like Borat?
My wife. No, so she is a normal person, but she said to me the other day, she goes, hey, I think I want to get a new mouse. I was like, okay. Like, you know, go ahead. Why would you even, you know, do you want some advice? I mean, the problem is she's a lefty, so she's got fewer choices than a righty.
Oh, does she use a lefty mouse?
Well, what she uses is one of those mice that's like symmetrical or whatever, but I had to go upstairs and look at what she was using. Right. I don't really ever go in her office per se. So I kind of disregarded her system here, and she has a Microsoft ergonomic keyboard that possibly was made in the 1990s. And, this ancient, I already forgot the name of it. It was like this Microsoft work. I think it was like Philip Stark or something. It was Microsoft had worked with some designer like 10 years ago or more to make this symmetrical, it looks like a piece of soap mouse thing. And I'm like, and by the way, both of these things are wired. Like they're...
Hey, I got a wired mouse.
Yeah. I still use a wired mouse. I'm like, Stephanie, there are 20 years of advancements that have occurred.
Now, does she have is it like a ball mouse? Know. Is she using like an old school ball
mouse? No, it's not. It's not that bad. But it's you know, yeah, but it's probably has like a red laser on it or something. Mm. It's really, it's just weird.
It's time.
Yeah. She doesn't think about this stuff, you know?
Yeah. Nobody. And I'm going to tell you, most people don't. We, the 100 or so people watching this live on YouTube and the 50 or so watching on another platform, we are the exception here.
Right.
I think it has a... Listen, here's the thing. We are the last generation, honestly, and I truly believe this. Right. Me, probably. I mean, you're before me, but I am probably the last generation, or mm-hmm. maybe one group after me, that gives a crap about performance. Unless you're doing, obviously, editing, video production, gaming. You're the only ones that care about gigahertz and cores. People don't even think about it. It's not even... part of their thought process when they're buying.
Well, by the way, but that's the gotcha that happens on the PC side. If you buy a Surface Go 2 or whatever it's called, or like a Windows 10 on an ARM device, God help you, or, you know, like it can still happen, but mainstream PCs, you know, anything mid-market or up, I often kind of cite the transition to quad-core processors that had happened a couple of years ago as being a big deal because it happened with no price increase and no issue with battery life. But honestly, even like a dual-core chip from 3 or 4 years ago or whatever, for almost anybody, like literally 90-something percent of people, 8 gigs of RAM, you know, whatever, just basic SSD storage, it's going to be fine for the rest of your life. It just is, you know? And and that's part of the problem because the PCs have gotten to a point. The other thing, like, think about this. Like, one of the big selling points of this M1 stuff, of any ARM-based PC, really is battery life, right? And, you know, sure, battery life is a big deal. We do have PCs that could get good battery life, for sure. These ARM-type designs are going to get better battery life, whatever. No one's going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like, we live in a world where we can't even travel. So. Yeah, I mean, battery life today is like what it used to be for like secondary computers you were using around the house. You're never more than 10 feet away from a plug. It kind of doesn't matter. Now, we all know and hope that that's a temporary condition, but I just feel like, you know, the selling point of going to ARM on the Windows side was always on connectivity and better battery life. And then the ability sometimes to have fanless designs that would not make any noise and, you know, could be really thin and light and everything. And there are definitely advantages to that kind of stuff. But the performance and compatibility were so terrible, and still are. And Intel has it always on connectivity. If you want it, you know, some PCs have it. And battery life is a lot better than it used to be. We've kind of grown past needing to do this on the PC side.
I first of all, Paul, I mean, here's the good news. You can still get a 720p camera in these MacBooks.
Yes.
I mean, that's the good news here. Right. That's what we've been. I got to tell you, though. So I'm curious to see what improvement they put in the MacBook Pro, the 720p, because it's not the same 720p. Essentially, what they did, from what I understand, they took the same type of camera they would put in an iPhone and they put that in.
Oh, No.
No,
they should have done that. That would have been expensive, but
that's not what they did.
No, it's the same 720p camera they've always had.
So what are they?
What they're doing is using some kind of AI to do picture enhancement or something.
I thought they were. First of all, why couldn't they? The iPad has an unbelievable camera, front facing camera. I'm not even talking rear facing, front facing camera.
Sure.
Why can't they put that on?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Yeah, it is a good question, Paul. Thank you. Thank you for recognizing that.
I think, to play devil's advocate, I will just say for this first gen of devices, obviously they're reusing the literal form factors of the predecessors of these computers. So the MacBook Air, the MacBook Pro, and the Mini are not even slightly different from their predecessors. They're identical. And so you want to reuse as much of the, you know, components as you can. You're saving, you're making a transition here. So it's possible that future MacBook Airs, eventually they'll change the design, you know? Yeah. And I'm sure at that time people will be like, oh, we're on the third gen M chip and new design. This is the first. This is the real one. Faster. This is the first real one. You know, and it will have a 1080p camera.
You know, Apple takes two generations with everything that they put out, right? Generally,
yeah.
It takes them two, like that. That first iPad, nobody talks about. It doesn't even exist in history anymore. Like Apple's done a remarkable job at erasing the history of that first iPad. You were very critical of that when it initially debuted, and so was I.
But then the second one comes out, and you're like, holy crap, look how thin it is, and it's got this awesome cover thing, you know? Remember you used to have to put the first-gen iPad in, like, this giant black condom thing? Like,
oh, my God,
Remember?
The rubber.
Nobody remembers this suit. Yeah, it was like a Batman suit.
Yeah.
You know, from, like, a Tim Burton movie.
And you know what? I'll tell you, and this is – and I brought this up a couple years ago when the iPad 2 was essentially gone, right? It was phased out. How many people still were using that thing?
Yeah.
How many people still are using an iPad 2? I have like five of these laying around here.
I just did a thing where the town comes and picks up old electronics. And one of the things that I threw in there was a iPad 3, which for the time had, I think, the most RAM or storage you could get. It was probably 32 gigabytes or something.
Is that the one that Apple immediately, like in 6 months, released another one?
Yeah, because it was so thick and heavy. Yeah. Like it was actually, it went back to being thicker.
Yeah.
And I don't remember why. It something to do with the components inside. It did have like, I don't know if it was 3G at the time or LTE or whatever it was, but it did have that capability. I like splurged on this thing. I probably spent like $600 or $700 on it. And it, you know, it's just being recycled. It's useless. Like it's completely useless.
Yeah. I feel like the longevity now, I don't know. That iPad 2, what, 2011? 12, 13, 14.
The iPad 2 was 15, amazing. I mean, that was an incredible design.
16, so like 5 years. Schools were still issuing them in 2017. Yeah, yeah. So think about that, you know, 4 years ago.
My school in the 1980s installed these CPM deck computers that were out of date for the 80s, you know. schools have been doing that for... School administrators, what do they do? Like watch QVC or go to Woot.com and... try to find like, oh my God, I got this incredible deal on these 46s. We're going to put them in the computer lab.
The computer on QVC is going to sell for $1,200. But, Paul, you're so freaking lucky today. They're giving you $82,000 worth of software for free.
Yeah, it's $82,000 worth of shareware programs.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Floppy.
Unbelievable. Hey, let's take a minute and talk about, since we were talking about chips, Pluton. Mm-hmm.
Pluton, yeah.
So is this like TPM?
It is literally the next.
Is
gen
it
TPM.
Okay? You know what? That's so funny because when I heard them talk about it, I'm like, oh my God, this is like Windows Vista. This is TPM.
Here's what's wrong with our world, Andrew. I've gotten this question multiple times, and this really says a lot about the state of where people's heads are at with technology. People hear that Microsoft is creating a new security chip called Pluton, and they say, oh. Is that like Apple's T2 chip? To which I say, no, it's not. Apple's T2 chip is like TPM, which is something Microsoft did almost 20 years ago. Okay, so no, it's not like that. Apple gets a lot of credit for doing this stuff, but this has all been done before, right? So Microsoft worked with the rest of the industry back in the early 2000s when Longhorn was still in development. To create what became known, I think it was called Palladium, if I remember correctly, but which, by the way, suggests to me that Pluton's not going to be the final name of this thing either. But they came up with this trusted platform module chipset for PCs. It was a security chip. And the idea was that it would work in concert with the operating system to protect the system from attack while it was running, but it would also have boot time protection. So it would prevent kind of man-in-the-middle attacks if you were booting the computer up or something or rebooting it. And great idea. Everyone signed on board. Chipset makers, PC makers, everybody. So you kind of can't buy a computer without a TPM chip in it today. The problem is, of course, hackers are inventive. And so it turns out TPM is super effective. It works great. It actually does its job that people have not been able to break into this thing.
Yeah.
But the problem is it communicates with the CPU and the rest of the system via a system bus. And now they're starting to attack the system bus.
Oh, interesting.
So Microsoft went to all of the companies that create CPUs that run on Windows computers, meaning Intel, AMD, and Qualcomm. and said, we are creating a next generation version of this thing. We would like you to embed it in your chips, in your CPUs. So these companies all make completely different CPUs, but the same Microsoft security chip is going to be inside of it, embedded inside of it. And that way there's no communications bus to attack. It's literally integrated inside the CPU. That's amazing, right?
That is.
Like that they got that kind of support across the board. So we won't see the first PCs using the system until sometime next year, probably late next year. But that's, you know, they're there again. See, they're partnering. You know, they don't just do it themselves. They can't, right? But the partner approach is apparently working in that case, and that's good.
Yeah, very interesting. I think we're headed to a very interesting year for tech devices and technology. The way that we use technology, and I think this is going to be the big story of next year, right? When we're less thinking about COVID, obviously, you know, we're recording
I can't wait to think less about COVID.
I mean, listen, it's November 19th, right? The vaccine should be approved. Not that should be, but it should be approved probably in a month. And then by the end of the year, it would have been in the hands of, let's say, 10 million people already. And then we'll go forward. You know, like
Merry Christmas, everybody. Here comes the vaccine.
Well, unfortunately, that's not many. We need way more than 10 million.
I know.
But I think the big story is going to be how we use our computers. We saw this happen when everybody went on lockdown, when COVID happened. You know what? The first thing that all these big box tech stores and Amazon, everybody, you know what they ran out of? Webcams and laptops.
I know. Computers.
Yeah. Like computers. I'm curious to see what the
that's already starting to slow down, by the way. So
yeah, but now we're in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a nice holiday quarter for all the usual reasons, plus COVID. Absolutely. The other thing, I will say this. I mean, IDC, Gartner, whoever the companies that kind of analyze these businesses, believe that there's this COVID bump is kind of temporary, and the PC market's going to go back to where it was before, which is, you know, falling every year a little bit or whatever. And okay, fine. But I think the other half of this is that a lot of the changes that have been brought by COVID are going to be permanent, right? And so I was just joking about battery life a little bit and saying we don't even need battery life anymore. We're all home. And the truth is, even when we have vaccines and the world opens up again and people start going back to work, a lot of people are going to be working from home either permanently or on a rotating basis or whatever it is. You know, people who maybe never work from home will work from home some. People who work from home sometimes and came into the office sometimes will be more at home than in the office. And so we're still going to be in places where we always have power, you know? So, I mean, it's kind of interesting in some ways how obviously people are going to fly and people are going to commute and people are going to need battery life. But I think for a device where you're kind of sitting and focusing and typing on a big keyboard and, you know, whatever, the need for that stuff, it's possible it's been reset, you know, by COVID somewhat.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm curious to see what happens with this, with the way just patterns, you know, like, you have people that have, and I think it's in a weird way, it's a positive. Like people are getting a little bit more knowledgeable on how to use computers again. And I feel like,
well, out of necessity, you know,
out of necessity, right? Like I feel like out of necessity, I had to learn how to use a computer. Right. My father, you know, not a tech guy. My mother, not very tech. You know, she wasn't very in that. My father was a mechanic. My mother was a banker. So how often were they? I mean, my mother was using a computer way more. But, you know, other than an Excel sheet, what the hell was she doing? Not much. Right. Here you go. I'm 6 years old. They buy me a Tandy and they say, here you go. Figure this out. You know, like thinking like my daughter's five. My daughter's going to be five in January.
Yeah,
I can't imagine taking and you know, iPads are super easy now. You know, you could give an iPad and the kids are going to figure it out. Putting a desktop, like, you know, a Windows desktop in her room and saying, okay, Tay, this is yours. Figure it out.
Right. Well, maybe like, she'll start writing programs in Visual Studio or something. You never
maybe know. It's possible, but I think it's fascinating. But the positive here is people are using technology more. They're understanding the technology better because they're forced to. How many people in their 40s that have, or late 40s, early 50s that have resisted technology for all these years. And we all know those people. They're like, I'm not very good with this stuff. Now they have to use Microsoft Teams on a daily basis.
God, what a hell that is. Yeah, I mean, my mother used to kind of come to me sometimes and say, hey, I'd really like to learn how to use a computer, you know? And it's like, you're 70 years old, Mom. Just ride it out. It's a world of heartache. You
Trust
know?
Me. You're in a way better place than me.
Yeah. But on the other hand, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, so she doesn't have any need to, you know, write stuff or, you know, use spreadsheets or anything like that. But, you know, she has an iPad now and she has a phone and whatever. And so, you know, if she wants to, you know, FaceTime with her grandkids or, you know, whatever, look at photos or whatever it is. I mean, that stuff all works fine for her. I mean, it's, she still doesn't understand it, but I mean, yeah, learning, you know, like setting up a computer with a keyboard and a screen. And I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Listen, I think it's an amazing thing. My grandmother, she's in her 80s, late 80s.
Yeah.
She's on an iPad. She's on an iPad FaceTiming people.
Good for her. That's great.
I think that's pretty cool. Like, yeah, you know?
It is cool.
This person never drove a car. Couldn't turn the TV on. Now she's on an iPad. I think it's
really cool. From a horse to an iPad.
I know. Unbelievable. Yeah, it really great. Is. A couple things I wanted to touch on before we wrap it up for today. We'll do a quick post show, and I think I'll start putting this thing together. I have till 4 o'clock because Suncast has to get ready for a show. So you guys could stay tuned and hang out with me while I try to see what the hell I'm doing here with this computer. So I'm going to be building this for the next, you know, here's another reason, right? I don't have the ability to continue staying live and then have another show produced. Now, guess what? John is going to have this unbelievable computer production box. He's going to produce everything locally. I don't have to ever get off the air. I could just stay on the air for the entire day.
Oh, God bless us all.
Listen, we're going back into another lockdown. So I just sent out an email to a couple of my colleagues. And I said, well, I would not make plans to come into the city in 2 weeks. Because it's not happening. It's crazy. It really is. What do you think of Big Sur? Yeah. I didn't ask you about Big Sur.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of the Mac, Mac OS, I should say. To me, what's happening there is a really nice, consistent, and to me, pretty. I know some people don't like it. What's that?
I don't think Apple is either. I think they're very much aggressively trying to eliminate the traditional desktop and iOS.
Okay, but I mean, I think it looks fine. I'm not, like I said, not a fan of the OS, but as far as the look and feel of what they've done in this release, I think that's great. Like, I think it looks great. And I like that it's a little more consistent with the iOS, iPadOS stuff. I know a lot of people are freaking out. They're like, oh my God, they're going to add touch to it and blah, blah, blah. And
that's fine.
Yeah, maybe. Should. But I mean, macOS, you know, one of the big strengths of the system is its visual consistency. And they've continued that, obviously, in this release. But they also made it prettier. So as far as the rest of it goes, like the Safari features and stuff, I couldn't care less about any of that. But
I have to tell you, a couple of weeks ago, you and I were talking about the new Google TV via Google Chrome, right? Yep. I forced myself after that conversation to use it every day. That is the only one. I literally disconnected my Fire TV to force myself to use it. And I like to do this every now and then. My next thing is Safari again. Because I don't use Safari at all. Yeah, and I did this a couple of years ago and I did find it very difficult to use, but I did like the actual software because it's very on the Mac. It's super fast. It works very well.
It's got a nice minimal look to it and all that
very
stuff.
Very nice. Yeah. It's a very good browser. It just, I'm engulfed in the Google environment, so I can't, I can't jump over there, but, I used the and I'll get back to the Mac with this because I have a point. I forced myself to use the new Google Chrome Google TV. I like it a lot. I think the interface is nice. I do have one very large problem.
I'm curious what this is because I've had troubles making this transition myself. Okay.
You know the input button?
Yep.
Okay. The input. And then on the screen, it pops up saying, like, hit the input button if you want to change your input source.
Right.
It doesn't go away.
Right. I can't.
Do you have the same problem?
Yeah. It doesn't control. Yeah.
It doesn't. I mean,
so you have to reach for the phone remote. I mean, the TV remote.
TV remote.
Yeah.
To switch. But forget about it switching. Even if I don't touch it, if I turn the TV on.
Yeah,
that it comes up on my screen, that bar that
comes up with that on. That sucks. What kind of TV is it?
It's a brand new Vizio. It's a 4K Vizio I got last year.
Okay.
So I was like, okay, you know what? It's the TV. Took it downstairs, plugged it in this one. Same exact thing. That bar stays on the screen.
That source button or whatever it's called doesn't work for me. That's one of the things. I've tried really hard. So I have two big issues with this thing. I'll be using it and it will just switch to another input. And I don't know, like nothing else I use ever does that. So if I'm on Roku or Fire TV, it just works fine. But if I'm on the Chromecast, we'll be watching TV or whatever. And all of a sudden it's on the Roku and it's like, what's going on? Like, I have no idea why. Like I feel like you, I would have to literally unplug the other stuff for this thing to work. Although then maybe it would just switch. I guess I'll try it and it will switch to an empty input. I don't know. But the other one, and this is just a functional thing and I don't understand it. What the central idea behind this Google TV software is so good. You tell it which services you're connected to that you have accounts at, and it will recommend content from all of those services. So as you go through your, you know, For You list or whatever, it'll be like, here's a TV show from Hulu. Here's one from Netflix. Here's another one from Netflix. Here's one from Amazon. And that's really cool. Like, I think that's a neat idea.
Yeah.
And you can add shows to a watch list that are movies or whatever from any service. It could be Google's. It could be third party. It doesn't matter. It's a great idea. The problem is, as I flip through this interface, it will recommend a show that's on Acorn TV, which I don't subscribe to. Or it's on HBO Max, which I do not subscribe to. Or it's on, you know, whatever. There's 10 or 20 of these things.
Yeah.
So I keep thinking to myself, obviously I'm missing something. There's an interface where these things are checked off. But if you go to the interface where the services are, all of those things are unchecked.
Hmm.
But it's still promoting them to me.
Interesting.
And I don't want to see shows I can't watch. I want to see shows I can watch.
You can, yeah.
And I don't see a switch for that. Like, I feel like I'm missing something. Do you see that too?
I haven't played with that much.
Okay.
I haven't noticed, give me an example of a service. Give me an example of one.
HBO Max.
See, maybe because I have all of them.
Well, if you go and look at the list of services, let me look at my phone because I think it's the same on
the
phone.
I have Stars.
You can't have all of them. Like, there are 20 or 25 of them, right? So let me see. How do I find this? I want to use Google TV.
So I got to tell you, that's the best part of this, right? The integration with Google TV. Because something I've always said was, like, my dad, right? Great example. I have Google TV.
Yeah.
He never uses it. He has a Roku. And it's hard for him to... He's just not very technical. So think about how people used to use TV and how they use it now. Before you turn it on and you know, okay, channel 5 is Fox. Channel 2 is CBS. Okay, I can figure this out. I get to the channel. I can memorize the number. How do you take that person and move them into this digital streaming thing, right? My dad knows Netflix, and he could do that. But it's always been difficult for him to kind of go over to Google TV or YouTube TV because it's another app you got to click on. You got to navigate. You got to learn another thing.
Yeah.
However,
this is definitely a problem.
On the Google TV, it's right there.
Right.
Front and
center. I love the idea. So – some of the services that they can connect to that I do not have subscriptions at, right?
Okay.
CBS All Access, Epix Now, HBO Max, Showtime, Stars. So actually, it looks like there's only about 15 totally or whatever the number is. But, you know, I do subscribe to like Hulu and Prime Video and Disney Plus and Netflix and whatever.
Maybe
else,
I have not been recommended something on another service that I don't have yet.
I'm just, I see it all the time. It makes me crazy because I really like the idea that it's only going to promote things. You know, it's like top picks for you, right? It's like Inception. So I click on Inception and actually that one's on Prime Video. Neat. That's fine. Teen Wolf is on Prime Video. This is on my phone. So this is a little different, but on the TV. Yeah. On the TV, you can see underneath. Actually, you can see it here too. If it's a movie, it will tell you the service it's in. And on this phone app version of Google TV, actually, I'm not seeing any that are not on services I don't have, which is good. That's the way it should work, right? So that's a really good. That's good. But on the TV, all the time, like the, it's frustrating because I literally, you go through a list, you're like, yeah, I want to watch that. And then you look down and it says, you know, Epix or whatever the thing is. They're like,
that's why they want you to.
Yeah, here on this thing, it says it's Pluto TV. It's recommending me something on Pluto TV. So I don't have Pluto TV. I've told it I don't have it, but now it's telling me to. So when you click on it, it says install Pluto TV. It's like, I don't want to install, you know, and then you can like select Pluto another TV. Service, but then you have to pay for it.
You would like Pluto TV.
It doesn't matter if I like, I'm just saying like Crackle is in here. Okay. Yeah. Now I'm starting to see some. It's just weird. I don't know.
Yeah.
Remember, it was probably
Pluto
when
TV's
Apple
free. Hit. So maybe that's why it's being recommended to you.
Okay. Maybe.
That makes a little bit of sense. Garrett in our chat.
No, but I see HBO Max content recommended as well. I think if you have a big digital library of movies like I do, like one of the cool things it could do would be to recommend stuff I already own. And it could be like the, what was that thing called? The iPod Shuffle when it didn't have a screen on it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you could do like a, it was basically like, I feel lucky playlist. You could, it would just throw, it would like, based on what you listen to, it would give you a bunch of stuff it knows you like, and then stuff that was sort of like that kind of thing.
Yeah. I always like doing that and getting the Christmas version of Running with the Devil.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
You know, all acoustic, you know, version of with jingle bells playing in the backdrop. I think, but to kind of summarize that, I very much like it. I think they're onto, as far as the interfaces go, like I like the Fire TV. That's my favorite. Yeah. Right.
But don't you think this is very similar to that?
What?
It is. The Amazon, the Google TV thing. I think they're very similar.
No, they are.
Other.
It's still Android. They're both running Android.
Just the look and feel of it.
Yeah. And there's an update coming, by the way, that makes it even more like it.
Hmm.
There's a new update. So if I were to rank these, I would probably say the Fire TV because I'm so comfortable with it, and I've done all these things.
It has a better remote, too, by the way.
It does. It has the best Fire remote TV in the business. This,
yeah, it really does.
That, by the way, here's another thing. You have white sheets, Paul. You have a white comforter. You're never finding this remote ever.
Right. It's like my daughter's AirPod. My daughter lost her AirPods in the hotel bed one time recently.
Yeah, it's a search. So, yeah. I really like the Fire TV. That's my number one. I like the interface. I like the feel. I would say number two, I would give, and I'm not going to, I know the NVIDIA stuff. People love the NVIDIA Shield. They absolutely love it. I'm going to consider Google TV and that together, right? When I'm talking about this, I know that the NVIDIA Shield is very beefy. It's a very good device, but I don't have one as an everyday device. I got one for a short period of time and I gave it away. So, I would say that Android TV and the Google TV interface is probably second. Third, I would put, the Apple TV interface because it's a little dated at this point. And fourth, Roku. I want nothing to do with Roku. They're dead to me.
I don't like that. The Roku works best for me, but I hate the UI. Yeah,
it's the terrible UI. It's old now. You know,
that's
it's an
terrible
older UI.
It's been old for years.
By the way, I spoke to a friend of mine that develops for Roku, and you know what they said? Do you know why it looks like that?
Tell me it's made with JavaScript or some terrible thing, and no, it's like,
well, you know what? I could probably tell you that because they changed their app development a couple of years ago, where none of my apps work on Roku anymore because they totally changed the software. But the reason why is that if you look at their user base, it's an older user base for the Roku, and they don't want to shake that up.
The problem with Roku is you have like this grid of icons that represent the apps that you want to launch. But to the left of it, there's another menu like text. And if you hit the wrong button, which is very easy to do, and by the way, an older person would be very easy to do, you go down to one of the other, it's like not on apps anymore. So now it has all these nonsense choices, and it shouldn't be that easy to get off of this grid of apps. Like the grid of apps should be the interface. One of the items in the grid should be settings or whatever the other things are. Like there should be one interface. Like it's too easy to get over to the left interface and then you're off the apps. Like it's not a very good interface. I mean, if you look at the way every other product that you talked about handles settings, it's either exactly what I just said, or it's even harder to get to because it's off the screen.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's not very well done.
So a couple of things before we wrap it up, I want to recommend a piece of software that I just started using, and we used to do this regularly, but I think we should do this again, Paul. The software and hardware recommendations.
Okay.
People really enjoy it. I don't know why we stopped doing it. I probably forgot one week and we just never did it again. Sure. But I recently, so a big problem is I use TeamViewer all the time, right? And people who use TeamViewer know that it's a very expensive piece of software. It's not cheap whatsoever. It's about $1,000 for the year to pay for the paid version. So most people don't ever have to do the paid version. The free version's fine. However, because I TeamViewer in and out so often, now it's flagging me as commercial use, right? Okay, fine. So I looked at the pricing. I'm like, $1,200. I'm like, that's a lot of money. Yeah. That's a lot of money, but, you know, whatever. You have to. However, I was recommended, John Suncast recommended Parsec to me. P-A-R-S-E-C? Parsec? S-E-C.
Parsec, yeah.
It's a remote desktop application. Works on the Mac, works on the PC, and it's ultra-low latency. Like, right. Paul, this is...
So you can do gaming.
You can do gaming. It is super low latency, like shock. And that's who they kind of cater to is gamers. Because if there's like a whole gaming section here where you could join and do that. It is very impressive. Very, very impressive with the styling and the it just this is one of the first remote desktop softwares that I've used without having to tweak anything to get it to work so well. Very good piece of software. Everything works on. Obviously, audio works. I don't know if they have, I don't think they have file transfer on here. I have not seen it. Let me see what the CPU usage is when I do this. I'm at 34% right now on CPU usage and I'm remoted in to this machine. That's very impressive. So it's decoding at 6 milliseconds. It's encoding at 2.8 milliseconds and the network latency is 2.4 milliseconds. This is very, very impressive.
Right.
Very impressive. If you need to remote into any of your machines, I would very highly recommend checking this out. It doesn't break anything either because I've had that problem where I've had any desk and then TeamViewer on the machine and it kind of broke stuff. This works very well. I don't think you could connect peer-to-peer, like connect on the Mac, but I think you could use the Mac to access other machines. I believe that's the case because I don't see my Macs listed here. I only see my PCs. And I started using this and I absolutely love it. If you want to check it out, go check it out. Very cool piece of software.
Nice.
And I'm not getting paid by them or anything. There's nothing. So just, I feel like now I got to explain myself when I like something and that kind of sucks because I got a couple.
Did they give you that portable display you were touting earlier for free? Is that what happened, Andrew?
Yeah, the portable. I wish they gave it to me. It's $194. That's another thing I'll talk about next week. It's called the Cuckoo Par. The Cuckoo Par display. I'll hold it up here. I don't know if you guys saw it before, if I did it on the air or not, but I got this portable display. Look at this. It's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that looks matte, very similar.
And it's a matte screen, which I absolutely love a matte display.
Yeah.
Especially in the studio with all the lights. Like right now, I hate looking at this monitor because everything just shines. Nobody buys matte displays anymore. That's interesting. Do you remember when the Macs used to come in a matte offering?
Yep.
Yeah, interesting. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Listen, if you're watching live, do me a favor. Hit the subscribe button here. We're on our way to 10,000
subscribers. Ring the bell, guys. Ring the bell.
Say it, Paul. You know, tell people.
I love saying that.
Ring the bell. Hit the like button. Smash that like button. There you go.
Hey, dogs. What's up? Ring the bell.
Ring the bell. Make sure you ring the bell. Please.
That's how you can tell them on YouTube.
For Christ's sake, hit the freaking bell.
Oh, the dog gets it.
Yeah, the dog's going to get it. Make sure you subscribe, like, follow us. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Of course, therot.com. The holidays are coming, and what a good gift for the tech enthusiast in your life. Get them a subscription to therot.com. Get them a Therot premium subscription. You can head on over to therot.com to There's a whole section here. You could click on premium content, and there's a slew of articles. One of the articles that we were talking about today, Apple did it again, which I very it does a great job at breaking down what we spoke about. There's another one you just posted yesterday, Pixel Imperfect. Oh, we should have spoken about that today. And of course, thinking about Google Photos, because a lot of people are up in arms because they have eliminated their free. They're free unlimited.
There's nothing wrong with Google Photos.
You dude, I have about how many gigs of photos do you have in Google Photos?
Let's see off the top of my head, it was 127.
I'm at about 200 now. So, it's a lot of
storage. So that amount of storage in Google will cost you $36 a year. It's nothing.
Yeah, nothing. It's unbelievable. It's
nothing.
You know, that's been the big story for Google. They made storage very inexpensive.
Yeah.
That was the big story here. They scale it now too, right?
So since the release of Google One, you can just keep adding, you can get as much as you want. It's nice.
Yeah. It's actually very good. And listen, that's why they killed it with email. That's why Gmail became the number one email provider. Because everybody else was offering you 5 gigs or 2 gigs of storage.
10 gigs of my storage is Gmail.
Is it really?
Yeah, 10 gigs.
What were they offering? Do you remember what, at the time when Gmail came out, do you know what the offering was for the storage?
No, but I wouldn't be surprised if they said it was unlimited.
I can't remember if they said unlimited or 5 or 10 gigs.
I bet they didn't talk
in gigs.
Yeah, back then.
Okay, better question. What was Hotmail? What was Microsoft?
Oh. Jesus, I don't.
Was it? Was it 5 gigs or is that too high?
No. That was nowhere close to 5 gigs. I mean, nowhere back close, in the day. No. That was no. I don't. I have no idea. That's interesting. I don't know.
I'm trying. Somebody in the chat is going to remember. By the way, Saddam Islam.
Sorry. I mean,
I read that too Sad fast. Man. He did hit the bell and he hit the like for us.
Thank you. Now we can sleep. Sad
man. I'm going to say that in the most American possible way. Sad man. First I call the poor guy Saddam. Then I'm calling him the God, sad dude. Man.
That is so
I'm
awesome.
Such an idiot.
On April 1st, 2004, Gmail was launched with 1 gigabyte of storage.
And that was a big freaking
significantly
deal.
Significantly more than competitors offered at the time.
Yeah, that was the
Let's
big deal.
Let's see what they offered at the time.
I want to say 500 megs. 250 megs.
Let's see if it says this article. Not to be... No, it just says it competes with Hotmail. I don't know. Hotmail. Looking it up. Now I want to know. This is really
I'm
bothering
curious.
Me.
All right, while we do that, we'll do that on the post show. Let's wrap it up here. Guys, thank you everybody for tuning in. This was a lot of fun today. If you're watching live, stay tuned. We're going to continue the fun here. We're going to do our bonus show. It's called What the Talk. If you want to listen to the bonus show, if you want to watch the bonus show, yeah, tell me, what is it?
So Hotmail launched many years earlier. So remember,
Gmail
was
first.
Sure.
Okay, I'm going to go with 200 megs.
No, this was 1996.
Okay. Oh, wow. 25.
So the free storage was 2 megabytes.
My God.
Yep. 1996. This is 8 years before Gmail. I know. Interesting. And it doesn't say what year this was, but at some point. Oh no, that's something else. That's an attachment size. Never mind.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
I'm curious what it was at the time when, in 2000.
Yeah. By that point. Yeah. It was less. So it was probably half or a quarter of that or something.
Yeah,
that's funny.
All right, guys. Listen, so if you want to watch the bonus show after we record it, go to patreon.com/whatthetech and fund us as little as $1 per show. You get access to all our bonus material right over there. All right, guys. That's it. See you next time. Bye-bye.